Quick disclaimer. The Airways Circle Radio podcast has been produced for entertainment, educational, and informational purposes only. All of the content, views, and opinions shared by our hosts and guests should not be a substitute for medical advice. Please consult your healthcare professional for any medical questions. Welcome to the Airway Answers podcast, expanding your breadth of knowledge. Our wonderful host is Nicole Goldfarb. Nicole is a speech-language pathologist, certified orofacial myologist, and an international speaker. Nicole is the owner of San Diego Center for Speech Therapy and Myofunctional Therapy. She has a special passion and interest in sleep-disordered breathing and diagnosing restricted phrenums as they relate to myofunctional disorders. In the Airway Answers podcast, Nicole will be interviewing specialists in the airway realm in order to help our listeners learn and understand all of the components to airway-focused treatment. You can help us by sharing this podcast episode with your friends and colleagues. Enjoy the show. All right. So welcome to Airway Answers, expanding your breadth of knowledge. And we have Dr. Mariana Evans here. I'm so excited to have you on this show today, Dr. Evans. I'll read your bio, and I'm sure everybody already knows who you are. Dr. Evans received her DMD and specialty training at the University of Pennsylvania. To serve her patients better, she joined the University of Pennsylvania Sleep Surgery Department as adjunct professor. She is the founder of OrthoPerio Institute, an interdisciplinary study club with extensive emphasis on prevention of the oral and systemic diseases. She recently developed 4D Morphotropic Orthodontics, an innovative jaw expansion protocol with a focus on airway and periodontal health. Dr. Evans divides her time between her busy practice, teaching, and conducting research on the relationship between oral and systemic health. And I gathered your bio from an upcoming course that you're having, which I'd love to hear a little bit about that course. And today, one of our focuses is going to be on expansion for the under 6-year-old population, which is extremely, extremely important. So thank you so much for being here, Dr. Evans. So could you talk a little bit about the 4D Morphotropic Orthodontics and then the upcoming course that you're having that is, I see it's April 12th through the 13th, and it's called Innovations in Early Orthodontic Treatment, Revisiting Treating Children Under Younger Than the Age of 6.
So thank you so much for your invitation to be part of this discussion. And I think talking about expansion for young children is really a very important step in facial development and facial assessment that we should all take do. But it has been very minimally researched, and the research in this area is very limited because for 100 years, we were looking on how to align the teeth, how to make them stable, and how to treat crowding. We didn't look at the jaw development from a very young age in terms of doing skeletal development for patients with airway issues. And we completely underestimated the value of early treatment for periodontal reasons. All the research that we have, for example, in periodontology shows that children in the primary dentition have much wider band of attached keratinized tissue around primary teeth as compared to children in around permanent teeth. And we never ask the question why there is a big jump in deficiency in the gum tissue from primary to the permanent dentition. Well, it turns out now that we have CBCT imaging to evaluate some of these skeletal problems, because I believe, based on my experience as a periodontist and an orthodontist, that gingiva, just like alignment of the teeth, if the teeth are crooked, it's just a symptom of a bigger problem. So the same thing goes with gingiva. If patient doesn't have enough gingiva, it's a symptom. It's not a disease. It's a symptom of a much bigger problem. And after looking at so many children, so many adults that have deficient jaws, I see a strong correlation between soft tissue or gum or periodontal deficiency and poor skeletal jaw development type of characteristics in these patients. So my course was developed over the past 12 years when I realized that we cannot use conventional tools to evaluate whether little children need to be expanded. And even if we agree that little children need to have jaw expansion earlier, how much to expand them? We have very limited research in this area, and I started to document a lot of cases and utilizing different tools to measure who needs expansion, who doesn't need expansion. And once I determined that they need expansion, how much to expand them. So I came up with the 4D morphotropic orthodontics, which is focusing mainly on jaw development. And once the jaw is fully developed skeletally with the orthopedic tools that we use, we position teeth axially in the bone, and then we engage those teeth in axial loading so they can be loaded axially rather than off axis, as teeth are loaded when the jaw doesn't grow correctly. And once they receive that axial loading, what we notice, actually very interesting, we notice that the bone around teeth gets stronger and is more visible on the x-ray, which every single study shows that there is less bone around the teeth after conventional orthodontic treatment with braces, for example. So we actually see the opposite, that patients, when we do this treatment in the right time, will have a thicker bone around the teeth. When you combine skeletal development together with loading the teeth that are positioned axially in the bone. So it's very exciting. And I opened this course primarily for the orthodontists and pediatric dentists, because I think that the majority of these patients that will be treated under age 6 will be treated by a pediatric dentist, because they have the experience, they have the education to manage these children in the chair, utilizing all the new technologies that we have today, and being able in the best way to deliver very high quality treatment for these young children. And I hope that orthodontists also will do it younger rather than waiting till age 8 or 7 or after age 6. And maybe even some general dentists that like to see children and do already some very basic early treatment for children also will engage and do a service for these young patients and help their jaws grow in a younger age. So by the time they have permanent teeth erupting in the oral cavity, those teeth will have space and they will not erupt in compromising the periodontal tissues around them.
Yeah, that's amazing. Like, I never really thought about that. So that's the thing, that traditional orthodontic techniques, because maybe they're aligning teeth without attending to the skeletal components. So we're kind of teeth are compensated. Is that what's causing the periodontal issues? Is because there's not enough bone supporting the teeth when they're not lined up straight in the bone. Is that correct?
So the interesting thing about development of the teeth is the transition. So a very big component of my course will be focusing on the transition of the patient, of a child, from the primary to the permanent dentition. There is very little attention that was given to this transition in the research, in pediatric dentistry, orthodontic research when it comes to eruption of the teeth. So the way, when you look at the size of the permanent teeth and the size of the primary teeth, there is a very dramatic difference in size. So the nature designed our jaws, so you don't transition from the primary dentition to the permanent dentition all at once. There are special sequence of eruption that is pre-programmed to happen in each child, and a certain number of teeth will erupt at certain age, and then there will be a little kind of resting period, and then more permanent teeth erupt. So that resting period is accommodating for the growth of the jaw and the growth of the follicle of the tooth that is happening inside the jaw to allow those teeth to erupt safely in the oral cavity. And safely in my eyes means that the tooth erupts with enough gingiva and enough bone supporting it from all around it. What is happening to children today, we know that the faces of children are not growing properly. They are not growing forward enough. They are not growing wide enough. So there is a traffic jam inside the bone before those teeth erupt. It's like everything is, all the follicles of the permanent teeth are pushed back and in inside the bone, and they start changing their orientation inside the bone before they erupt. And in some children, when the jaws are so small, those follicles will basically perforate the bone, make a hole in the bone, like moth eating the bone, on the outside, on the in or the inside of the jaw, that by the time that those teeth erupt into the oral cavity, they will not only not have enough gingiva, but they will not have even enough bone around them by the time they reach the position in oral cavity. So that all can be diagnosed early. And believe it or not, I am a strong believer that you don't need all this fancy 3D imaging to diagnose it. There is a more simple way to diagnose the problem in a younger age using very simple clinical indicators. But the CBCT is excellent to use for educational purposes. So we have some CBCTs already of children that had very severe deficiency. We can learn a lot from those CBCTs. So CBCTs show that if you have severe crowding, that the buccal and lingual bone around the tooth, that is so, so important, because that's the bone that is going to support the root of the tooth for the rest of the patient's life, is already eaten away before the tooth even makes it into the oral cavity because of the crowding. So if you can address it in a younger age, you can avoid all of these complications. So this is what I would like to teach orthodontists, and especially pediatric dentists, and also periodontists that are developing all these fancy bone and soft tissue grafting techniques to regenerate the bone that is not even there by the time the tooth erupts, because we are missing the window of treating it in young kids.
It's not only
the airway. The airway is a big component too. The airway in a younger child is more of a cause of the poor jaw development. And then when jaw fails to grow right, it's a vicious cycle that kind of closes, that it compounds on the compromised breathing through the nose. But, so you have to break that vicious cycle as soon as possible. You have to optimize that nasal breathing, lip closure, tongue to the palate posture, and that has to happen in a young age. Even between age 4 and 6 is, to some extent, some of these problems already late to fix. We are not fixing, preventing anything. We are fixing the problem that already is there. But when it comes to eruption of the teeth and development of the follicles of the teeth and preventing gum issues, periodontal problems later in life, I think under age 6, you can still make a difference.
Okay.
Patient.
Do you think this is something most periodontists aren't even aware of?
Well, the periodontists are trained to treat the problems, the defects that already exist. The prevention part of periodontal education and treatment has everything to do with already existing periodontal disease. So you are not preventing periodontal disease unless you are a restorative or general dentist when you see the patients regularly every 6 months before they develop the disease. Mm-hmm. The periodontist sees patients that already lost the teeth, are about to lose the teeth because of bone loss and gum infection and periodontal attachment loss, or they are there to treat those periodontal defects when they already need treatment.
Yeah. I wonder if periodontists would even be over. Yeah.
It's too late to prevent the recession from progressing when recession is already there or when the patient doesn't have any attached keratinized tissue. Mm-hmm. We have to do it earlier. The question becomes, how early? What is the right age? Mm-hmm. Well, the minimum that we can do is actually treat a child in the primary, diagnose crowding, diagnose small jaw problem in a younger age, make room for those follicles of the permanent teeth to allow those teeth to erupt with sufficient gingiva and bone around them. And that is totally possible. And I will show cases in my course that will reflect what we are talking about, that you can improve periodontal support with proper, healthy, improving and facilitating healthy eruption of the permanent teeth.
And it makes perfect sense. Like that, that's so clear. It's so logical.
How did we not think about it 50 years ago?
Exactly. It's same with like the whole airway and our jaws are shrinking. It's just so logical. It makes perfect sense. Our teeth are crowded. Our jaws are not large enough to house our teeth and we're choking on our tongues. Like all this is so logical, but it's so surprising that it's really taken so long to get to where we are. And there are many people who still doubt or are treating with traditional methods or not working to prevent. Right. I have a question about you said CBCT might not be needed to diagnose these issues. There are some clinical indicators. Are you able to talk about what some of those clinical indicators might be?
Well, one of the very simple clinical indicators is looking at the face of a child from the side. If the upper and lower jaw are recessed and not ahead of the forehead, automatically that child doesn't have space for the teeth. Because in order for the teeth to have space in the jaw has to be certain size and certain distance to the rest of the cranium. And if that jaw is recessed, I will show you case after case. I have not seen a patient. In other words, I have not seen a patient. When I look at the face and the face is recessed that had normal development of the teeth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So this is like, in other words, like we as dentists are used to look in the mouth before looking at the face. This mm-hmm. is thinking the opposite way. Let's look at the face first and estimate what is happening inside the mouth if the face is growing this way or that way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you, once you start looking for these things, you will be surprised because there is, if the upper and lower jaw are too short and not growing forward enough, you will rarely, I have not seen one mm-hmm. patient that has no crowding if the jaws are recessed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They could be in a crossbite. They could still crowd, doesn't mean that no crowding is not equal to have spacing between the teeth, because the patient could have spacing between the teeth and still have crowding, not enough mm-hmm. room, if the teeth are severely flat. So, for example, if the patient has low tongue posture, has huge obstructive tonsils, and the only way for them to be able to breathe and to be able to function properly is to hold the tongue forward and on the lower jaw. You may have spacing between the lower teeth, but those teeth will be flat. So you have to position them virtually on the basal bone axially in order to diagnose if you have enough room for them or not. So just because clinically you see spacing doesn't mean somebody is not crowded.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point.
Spaced out teeth could be flat, and flat teeth are not, this is not healthy either. It's not the normal physiologic position in the bone. Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the adult expansion techniques involve not just expanding the bone, but then uprighting the teeth because due to all that compensation, right? So decompensating the teeth in order to provide, you can't go back and like fix the periodontal problems, but it'll help prevent future periodontal problems when the teeth are decompensated.
This podcast is brought to you by the Airway Circle members. Become a member today and have immediate access to hundreds of lectures by world-renowned experts in the airway field. To get a free month, use code Airway Answers.
Yes, we are talking when you do the expansion at any age, and obviously we cannot do like appliance type of expansion in infants. You can theoretically, but it's not going to be a common practice, let's say. Because in infants, we have to do more breastfeeding, more physiologic type of feeding to grow that upper jaw. But if you talk about expansion with appliances, if you determine that the patient needs jaw expansion and you are going to use teeth or implants for that expansion, you already determine that the jaw is deficient. So if those patients already have any kind of teeth in the mouth, those teeth grew to compensate for that deficiency. So sometimes the upper teeth will be flat buccally and the lower teeth will be lingually, excessively lingually inclined. Sometimes the upper teeth will be upright but in a crossbite and crowded, and the bottom teeth will be pushed out of the basal bone because the tongue is resting on the back of the mandible, pushing those teeth out of the bone. So any type of expansion therapy, orthopedic expansion, where we widen the jaw, has to involve decompensation of the teeth. And decompensation of the teeth means if you expand the bone enough, you will be putting the teeth back into the axial position to function axially in the bone. There is now a very huge, I would say, problem in the orthodontic profession because we don't have good consensus on how much to expand the patient. You could talk to 10 different orthodontists and they may have a different way to measure how much they expand and what they consider sufficient expansion. That shouldn't be like that, right? We should have more consensus. There is a reason why it's happening, but I don't want to discuss and create any friction here. But how much to expand right now is an open question, because if you don't use a CBCT to expand, which I think is a very common practice today, you may not see in adult patient in particular, and in adult patient, I always use a CBCT if I expand because we are dealing with a compromised situation. Without CBCT, it's very difficult to know where the bone is and where the tooth is in relationship to the bone. So that research is very clear. With CBCT, we can more accurately diagnose how much to expand. But even if we use the CBCT to look at the teeth, we don't have a consensus. What do we use for measurement? Do we look at the teeth to measure how much to expand? But if we look at the bone, how much to expand, which points or references we use to expand, there is no consensus. So 10 different orthodontists may expand one patient different amounts.
Right. That's a problem.
This type of expansion should involve dental decompensation.
Okay. So it does it seem like you should expand enough to where you can decompensate the teeth and line them up correctly? Is that like what? How do they come up with a consensus? What's the right amount to expand? Is that ever going to be a question answered?
Mm-hmm. So one of the problems that we have in imagining how much to expand is that traditionally we look at the back of the jaw. Is it narrow enough and needs expansion or not at the level of the first molars?
Mm-hmm.
But when you look at the average population, the majority of the patients have the problem in the front of the mouth, not always in the back. If mm-hmm. it is in the back, it's already a big problem,
mm.
at least on my like observation and experience. But if it's not in the back, you can miss it and not expand the patient that really needs expansion for the front. Today, the jaw, if you are familiar with myofunctional therapy, the function of the tongue, there is a variation how people rest their tongue when the jaw is deficient. Some, the tongue can expand the back of the maxilla and the mandible if the tongue has a lot of strength in the back. It also depends on the attachment of the tongue to the base of the floor of the mouth. And sometimes it's just the tip of the tongue that is not functional. Sometimes it's the whole tongue is just very lazy and like just laying and putting a lot of pressure on the lower jaw. And sometimes the tongue actually is extremely strong, you know, and it's very strong. It's very difficult to manipulate. And it will expand even in adult. Very common in patients with sleep apnea. Maybe they have more restriction in the posterior portion of the tongue, but that tongue will broaden the back of the mandible, even in adult. But the front of the maxilla and the mandible is very narrow. So luckily today, we have the tools that we can differentiate expansion. We can say that this patient needs more parallel expansion from the front to the back of the jaw. And that patient needs more expansion in the front, and we can customize the appliance and the position of the screw for that particular patient based on their need. Who needs more expansion in the front, we can expand them more in the front, or like mm-hmm. in a fan shape. Who mm-hmm. needs more expansion in the back, usually also need expansion in the front, so you mm-hmm. can expand them more parallel or program your device for more parallel expansion. So we are practicing in our dream time, where we have the technology, we just need to use it to the full expression.
Yes. Well, I'd love to talk a lot about the under the 6-year-old population, because that is so important that we get to these children early, because clearly we can prevent not only airway problems, but periodontal problems and a whole array of other health issues. So how did you get interested in expanding children at such a young age? When did you realize this is so important, and what's the youngest age you expand on? What techniques? I want to hear it all.
Yes.
Tell me all about the young ones.
So for me, I have a brain and the eyes of the periodontist. My hands are the hands of the orthodontist, but this part and this part is the periodontist. So I think my brain is set to think like a periodontist. So when I started my practice, which is now 13 years ago, I saw a lot of patients that were adults with periodontal issues like gum recessions, periodontal disease, fractured teeth that need implants, and was treating them for these periodontal problems that they had. And because we had this new practice, a lot of these parents started to bring their children for evaluation. And then I had an opportunity to see a child and also know what is happening in the parent mouth. And that was extremely eye-opening and very helpful for me to be where I am today, because I could see a little boy that looks just like his dad in the primary dentition before, or like early mixed dentition before they even developed the same problems, but I saw the pattern.
Mm-hmm.
the trajectory of the jaw growth, the pattern of facial development, similar symptoms in terms of breathing, airway, and periodontal issues. So you could tell that, I don't know if it is like fully genetic. I think there is a very big environmental influence here, but I was always curious about what can we do about preventing things, especially in periodontal field. And it was very logical back then for me to assume that treating somebody younger and allowing the teeth to erupt into a healthy periodontal position in the mouth was better than treating children with lack of keratinized and attached gingiva once those teeth already erupt crowded.
Yeah. What techniques do you use for the young children for expansion under the age of 6? And what's the youngest child you've ever expanded?
So the youngest child I ever expanded is 2.5.
Okay.
And that is a child with sleep apnea.
Mm-hmm.
And an average child that I would expand under age 6 would be age 4. Mm-hmm. Not every 4-year-old, not every 5-year-old, not every 3-year-old is ready for this treatment. But we have a team and we kind of test the child step by step to see if they will be able to do it.
Okay.
Not everyone needs to be treated that young, but I think we have to at least screen them that young, if not younger, and evaluate the medical history, evaluate the facial development pattern, and try to at least at the minimum educate parents on what are potential risks and how we can treat them and avoid them. And avoid complications. So I don't use any removable appliances in young children. I use everything customized. I use a lot of 3D printed type of devices. Now with intraoral scanning, we don't have to take an impression on the child. We can just take a magic wand and do a digital impression. That is a big advancement in the field that allows us to very accurately capture the oral anatomy of a child and fabricate a very, very precisely fitting expander. And I like to use baby teeth. I think, as a periodontist, there are many reasons to use a primary tooth for anchorage versus to use a permanent tooth for anchorage. A permanent tooth with immature periodontium, that's a child between age 6 and 8. Traditionally, the orthodontists like to wait for the 6s or the first permanent molars to erupt to start expansion. That's wrong. And I can even speak very loud.
That is one of my questions for you, and we'll get to that in a little bit. But
it's unacceptable. Because if you wait for the permanent molar to erupt and you put that orthopedic expander that puts a lot of force on that permanent tooth, you're compromising the tooth periodontally. And what if on top of that the patient has severe clenching, parafunctional activity, poor sleep? If that patient has poor occlusion, you're putting that tooth with immature periodontal support in occlusal trauma. That's a recipe for a problem. So I will use the permanent molars as anchorage, but in conjunction with primary teeth. And if you want to use a primary tooth for your expanders and the child is 8, you missed your train. Because the primary molar, especially E, which is the second primary molar, very strong anchor, by the time the child is 8, especially female patients, that tooth is already too weak to apply proper orthopedic forces to it. Right. So there is so much happening in the face of a little child between age of 2 to when you have eruption of the primary teeth to the age of 10, that every stage Every day there is a change. You have to know. And I think our education today is not focusing enough on that early development and transition from the primary to permanent dentition. And I'm going to do it because we have
we need more of you. I mean, I get this.
I'm excited how many pediatric dentists contacted me. Because I was told before that pediatric dentists are not interested in orthodontics. That's wrong. There is so much they can do, and so many of them got so excited. They contacted me, and we have an amazing group already formed that are going to take it, the pediatric dentistry, to the next level. So we're very excited.
I just got the chills. I am so happy. Like, it's so good to hear you say this, because we get so many referrals for myofunctional therapy. And the orthodontist is referring, and we're happy because they're aware of oral soft tissue dysfunction. It's great they're referring. But we see these kids with extremely narrow palates, clear sleep disorder breathing, and we ask in our own perspective of myofunctional way, can you please expand to allow more tongue space, right? Because we don't want to tell them what to do, but I list all the signs of the sleep disorder breathing characteristics, you know, bruxism, snoring, mouth breathing. You know, I see the roof of the mouth is narrow, and we would love for you to widen so we can allow more tongue space. And I have so many orthodontists who come back and say, nope, the child's too young. We don't want to do any attachments on primary teeth. We want to wait until the adult molars are in. And then they have a reason. And what is their rationale that they want to wait? And it's they say there's something wrong with putting attachments on the baby teeth. What is the thought or the false thought?
Conventionally, I don't have the answer for you, because I think it's really, there is no answer to your question, but there is a habit that we have in any type of specialty, that we develop a habit, a routine of doing things, and then we transfer that habit to the next generation through training, to the next generation of orthodontists. So the orthodontist that is in training today is not even questioning. They are given the information what appliance to use, and the most common orthodontic appliance, it's called a Hyrax. Are you familiar with the Hyrax expander? So basically, it's expander where you have bands on the first molars with a screw in the middle and the wire connecting those bands. So some orthodontists that are more kind of have engineering mind added the premolar bands to redistribute forces to more teeth than just two teeth in the mouth. So here you have the most common appliance using two teeth in the mouth with the screw. When you look at the literature, it's the least effective because it expands very little the bone, especially in kids older than 8, and it tips the teeth a lot. And in the kids younger than 8, we don't have much research to know what it does. But I guess looking at some of these cases that I see for second opinion, it does the same, because under age 8, you have immature molars, and older than 8, you have a little bit more mature bone, so you still put a lot of pressure on the single tooth on each side. Yeah. Even with MSE, I know you're familiar with MSE, right? Everyone now, the functional world knows about skeletal expansion for adults. The same with MSE. The design of the appliance includes just the bands on the sixes. In adult patient, do you know that it tips the teeth before the bone splits in adult patient? Those molars are going to be already taped buccally because the wires connecting the screw to the molars are flexible. Luckily, we have now 3D printed technology where the arms connecting the screw to the teeth are rigid and you have less taping, but only if you connect more teeth and splint more teeth in the device and not just put force on a single tooth on each side. And you can use more implants. So the reason why the orthodontists are doing it, waiting, is because it's a habit.
Okay.
And it's from generation to generation taught that the Hyrax has to be on the first permanent molars.
I was just going to say that. So it sounds like it's an appliance issue. So there maybe these orthodontists.
So the decision in, so the way I explain it, and this is my opinion, it's not based on science. My opinion that it's decision that is being made when to start expansion is based on what appliance you use.
Yeah, that's what
it's
I was just
saying. And it's wrong. It should be patient-based. What is the best time to expand that particular patient? And some patients, maybe it is better to wait until 8. Luckily, I tell my patients and I tell my parents that I have technology today. I have tools in my hands, in my practice, to expand a patient at any age. Even at age 75 is the oldest patient I have expanded in my practice. Skeletally opening the sutures. But that is not the best age to expand a patient, right? The best time to expand the patient when you can diagnose this problem early. And also to allow not just for the patient to breathe better, but also for the teeth to grow in a healthier type of environment.
Yeah. And that's a really good
appliance driven.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And now I get it. There, the orthodontist who might have this mindset is maybe a little narrow-minded, thinking we can use a Hyrex, and that's the only type of expander we use. And it's going to cause too much dental tipping and problems if it's affixed to a primary tooth. So we need to wait till the adult tooth is in. But they're just focused on the appliance. Meanwhile, you would expand a child younger because you have different types of appliances where you could do that, where you wouldn't be.
You can design the appliance in so many different ways based on the patient's anatomy. Yeah. Even some children have some teeth that are weaker, like have weak enamel. So you can design the appliance to accommodate that patient's needs.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because this one recent case that we got was a 6-year-old with a lot of sleep disorder, breathing issues, very narrow palate. And the orthodontist said that there's negative implications for expanding on children that young. And she thinks it's absolutely crazy that people are trying to expand 4-year-olds, and said, fine, I agree. I will try to do an expansion on this 6-year-old only for a little bit, for 1 month to open things up. That's all she would do. So that just happened recently. So I'm curious what's going to happen. But I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. Like maybe we open the orthodontist mind up or what. But what would you recommend?
You are raising from this is how much do you expand a 4-year-old?
And this is a 6-year-old.
How much do you expand a 6-year-old? How much do you expand a 12-year-old? What are you using to measure?
Yeah.
And the answer is not the same. You cannot use the same tools to measure how much to expand a 4-year-old that you use to measure how much to expand a 12-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
And that mindset has to, you have to reset your brain because you are already programmed to think in the wrong way. Not only we measure in the back, when the patient needs to be measured how much to expand in the front. So that's one mistake we can easily make. And another mistake is, how am I going to expand a 4-year-old? What, you cannot use the same tools that you use to expand an older kid if the child is only 4. So you have to use other tools. And I agree, you should not expand a 4-year-old to a 12-year-old size.
Right. How do you know, like for the patients you treat, how do you know how much expansion they need? Is it going by symptoms and relief of symptoms, or is it a certain number?
So when we do when I do the expansion is fixing one thing and only one thing, is the jaw deficiency. It makes the jaw a little bit longer and a little bit wider. Or if you want to talk about permanent dentition, you basically make it the width and the length that it should be, right? So if you have a 4-year-old, there is a formula that you have to use.
Okay.
You can't expand a four-year-old to a 12-year-old size, because there is a growth that is going to happen from the moment you finish expansion till the adulthood. So you have
to do it. Like the Bogue index? Mm-hmm.
So you basically have to expand. If the child, so the problem of orthodontist mind is like, we don't want to expand them too early. One of the problems is because we are afraid what we will do to the nose. Mm-hmm. That maybe can cause nasal deformity, valid point. So you need to know how to apply forces and how fast you are going to turn that expander to make sure you minimize the nasal changes. If those changes are unfavorable, but in some patients, those changes may be favorable. So you have to look, you cannot look at the upper jaw without looking at the nose. Mm-hmm. Whenever you do any type of expansion, even in adults. So the nose is part of the upper jaw and you have to put it into equation. So on one end you have the nose, on the other end you have the teeth, and you have to decide what protocol of turning the expander and how much space you need for the teeth to do that, those turns to achieve that expansion. So in the orthodontist mind, they think that if the child is going to get expansion at age 4 and then they need more expansion later, then it's not worth expanding at age 4. That's better to wait and just expand all at age 8 or later, right?
Yeah.
And in the parents' eyes, they may think, oh, if I do this early expansion, will I need more treatment later, or this is all that I need? And we have to understand, if we have a growing child that needs expansion at age 4, that child probably is not growing right. So we can expand them a little bit at age 4 to help them, to give them a little jump and a little push in growth. But unless they continue to grow well, they probably will need additional treatment. So just because you are doing it age 4, there are benefits of it, but it doesn't mean that that 4-year-old treatment replaces additional treatment that that child may need later. What you're actually doing, you are probably simulating the growth of the jaw in a more physiologic way, where you don't do a big jump in expansion and increase the risk of root resorption, for example.
Yeah.
You do it gradually to simulate the way, to some extent, the way the face is growing, to allow that upper jaw to grow a little bit, support the teeth that are growing, support the base of the nose, and then reassess. And hopefully with that myofunctional therapy that you can offer after that expansion, the patient will change the habits and will improve the posture and will continue to grow better at the minimum, if not fully normal. But I think there are going to be still a lot of patients that don't grow well even if you expand. Doesn't mean it relapsed, but it may mean that the growth is still not optimal and they need more help later.
It looks like it froze.
I think you froze.
It froze. Now we're back. Okay, good, good, good. So you said there's some patients who won't, even with maybe myofunctional therapy or good habits, they might still need some more expansion as they get a little bit older. And I think that's and it's so important for parents to know that, because that you can only expand a certain amount based on the age, the size of the face. You can't, you have to expand, like you're saying, take into account the nose. And I think I also didn't realize that for my son, who he had an ELF appliance when he was 4, like almost 5, and the molars got really tipped out. So when he was 8, he couldn't do RPE. He got MSE, which was pretty young to do that. And the orthodontist said he might need more expansion when he's a little bit older. And I felt a little shocked, like, what? We're doing MSE? But he said there's only so much we can expand at every age because the face is growing and you can't expand out of the face. And it made me really think, wow, that's important for parents to know. And that's not a bad thing. And like how I think Kevin Boyd explains it well, too. It's like glasses. your prescription might change, right, as you get older. You don't deprive a child of glasses when they're young because they're going to need different ones when they're older or something more. So that's really interesting. I'm wondering for these younger ages, like 4, 5, 6-year-olds, how long is the actual expansion process? Is it a month, 6 months? Like how long is that going on for?
It's about 6 months.
Where they're actively turning?
No, they actively turn probably like for about 2 months. And then you have to hold the expansion additional 4 months as you apply the lower teeth.
Okay. So what do you recommend we respond to orthodontists who may say that they can't expand that young, even though we see signs and symptoms of jaw deficiency and sleep disorder breathing? What do we say to the orthodontist?
Well, I think in the end of the day, it's going to be mom that is going to be making a decision whether they want their child to expand in a younger age. And there is some European literature that shows very clearly that the primary teeth are good anchors as well. And I think the answer, you always have to back up with some kind of research. And the answer is that primary teeth can be used for anchorage.
Okay.
And we already have literature utilizing traditional bands in the expanders. Now with this 3D printed technology, it becomes even easier to use primary teeth. And also you get less tipping because you have more rigid connection between the bands and the expander screw.
And if the orthodontist's mind is so set on the Hyrex and they're not thinking of other appliances, then it's probably not a good match anyways. We're not going to convince them to like learn about a new appliance or different techniques. So yeah, it's probably just talking to the parents.
This is another valid point that the need for orthodontic treatment today is so high. And right now, our profession is in a major transition where we are realizing that we need to expand these services more to children. So now, for example, looking only at my practice alone, today, we have more adult patients seeking treatment, and we also have more young patients seeking treatment, right? So we don't have enough providers where the orthodontist, we will have enough orthodontists treating both. The demand is going to be higher than the supply, and it's going to be higher than the supply very soon. So the orthodontists today are probably overwhelmed treating adolescent patients, treating adult patients. They can only see so many patients a day. And if you want and demand to expand their practice to younger children, sometimes you have to actually modify your practice to see those younger patients because those younger patients require more time. They require a little bit different setup than when we see adult patients, it becomes challenging. And the orthodontic practice that is busy, established, it's very quick, short appointments. And it may be a big transition for already established practice. For pediatric dentists, it may be different, especially new pediatric practice, where you can focus more on prevention, more on the facial development, maybe a little bit less on restorative. And I think that the little kids are going to be or should be even treated by pediatric dentists because they have the experience treating younger children. They can, now we have the technology that they can learn some very simple appliances that they can use in a very predictable way for those younger children. But if there is an airway indication or periodontal indication to treat younger, I think those patients probably will be treated by pediatric dentists.
Mm-hmm. That's an interesting
thing. The other thing is, think about a mind of a 4-year-old or a 3-year-old, where they already are familiar with the pediatric practice that they go to every 6 months, maybe more than every 6 months. And now you are sending them to another provider that they haven't met before. That is a big fear for a lot of children of unknown. And right. if they have already a good established experience with the pediatric dentist that they see for regular care, they will be better patients. Their behavior will be more positive, and they will have much better experience getting the care by the primary care pediatric dentist than seeing somebody new. That's yeah. my kind of observation.
That makes sense. And when you get a young pediatric patient, what makes you determine whether they need expansion? Is it based on specific measurements or based on symptoms that the patient presents with?
So you have to encounter both. So we okay. look at the symptoms, existing symptoms of crowding, poor facial development, and poor sleep, and poor nasal congestion. They don't have to have sleep apnea, but if they can breathe through the nose, that upper jaw is not growing properly. So medical history and the symptoms are very important. And then, of course, clinical indicators. If they the face is not growing forward, if the upper jaw is too narrow, if they are crowded, that's enough information for me to justify treatment.
Okay. And you said you use like measurements to know it, the measurements differ for each age of when the expansion is done. Is that based off of like the Bogue index, or is there a specific formula that you use?
Yes, I use the specific formula, and it's not necessarily very easy to use, but not very difficult to use. And it's part of the course for the okay. pediatric dentist to learn. But I use to some extent, development of the jaw and to some extent, development of the teeth as the measuring indicator.
Okay. Okay. And that's your so if someone takes your course, they'll be able to learn how to specifically measure at each age.
Mm-hmm. At each age, yes. Okay. At each dental and chronologic age.
Okay.
So they are basically going back to some extent to the dental age. Like we went, dental age has nothing to do with expansion today, but we are going back a little bit to utilizing dental age and utilizing the size of the teeth to determine and customize expansion for your child.
And that makes sense to go off of the dental age, and it's very customized per each patient. Where do they land?
It allows you to not overdo it.
Yeah,
just as important to do it when you, it's bad not to do it, and it's also not good to overdo it.
Yeah, so everything in life. Important. Moderation. Yeah. So, I mean,
one could do it just right. And I will share what I figured out in my practice utilizing CBCT, what works and what didn't work for me. So. Okay. What didn't work for me, I realized early on as a periodontist that that expansion in a 10-year-old is too late. Mm-hmm. When I need to graft the lower incisors before they get braces, I miss the window. That's wrong. Yeah. That missed diagnosis in younger age. So mm-hmm. I think I realized back then that you have to do something before those lower incisors erupt. Not mm-hmm. even before upper incisors, before the lower incisors. And then, but I didn't have the right way to measure, so how do I measure? So mm-hmm. It took me a long time to realize, and I think it's working, so I'm very excited.
Okay, I'm not an orthodontist, I'm myofunctional therapist, speech therapist, but I want to know the secret. I want to take your course so I know the numbers, the measurements, because it's so interesting. What about, do you have a protocol for tonsils, whether you recommend tonsillectomy before expansion or vice versa?
Well, I am very orthodontist. I cannot recommend tonsillectomy.
Okay.
I can refer the person to the ENT to decide on tonsillectomy. But I always tell the patients, I look for the tonsils, if they are obstructive or not, clinically, and also if I have a CBCT on the CBCT, and we do a PSQ question to see the symptoms. And of course, look at the age, because there is a shrinkage of some of these lymphoid tissue with age. So if the patient doesn't have symptoms, even if they have bigger tonsils, you have to think twice to recommend removal. And I think today, ear, nose, throat specialists are very cautious on deciding doing this surgery on younger children. So I don't recommend on tonsillectomy prior or after expansion. I work in a team with ENT and we decide together. I can recommend expansion and how much to expand at a certain age. But when it comes to the surgery, this is something between the patient and the ENT to decide if they want to do it prior to expansion and after. I think there are indications for doing it prior to expansion, and there are situations when you can wait and do it later. Mm-hmm. But I cannot give that recommendation.
Okay. Yep, that makes sense. And we know there are studies showing that expansion can reduce the size of tonsils and adenoids. So in certain cases, mm-hmm. you can try the expansion first or vice versa. It's all mm-hmm. child dependent, right? Patient dependent, given the situation, probably how narrow they are, how large the tonsils and adenoids are. It's all very specific.
They are in the AP.
Right.
From the front to the back.
Mm-hmm. I have a few more questions because I know we're almost at the hour mark, but I have a couple adult questions. So I know you do a lot of customized Marpies, and I'm wondering, do you do the Invisalign at the same time you're doing the expansion part of the Marpie, or do you wait until the expansion part's done and then use Invisalign to decompensate the teeth?
Yes. So I think some of the providers, basically the answer to your question, we are limited now by our imagination. You can totally do both. Not okay. every person is a candidate for doing Invisalign the same time as you do the expansion, but you can.
Okay.
There is a big population of patients that is coming with straight teeth but narrow jaw. And I think mm-hmm. those patients are the best candidates for aligners done in conjunction with expansion. And okay. you have to decide based on what exactly you are doing to the upper and lower teeth, if it's worse to put the patients through aligners and expansion at the same time. Sometimes, okay. if you are not sure, like if it is also, if it is a female or a male, if the female, it's like every female should split. If you do the right mechanics, okay. the right appliance,
okay.
the female patients should split without any corticotomy or piezotome. 100%. So if you design the appliance right, then you can probably use aligners from the very beginning.
Okay.
You just have to program the split into the aligner. But if you have the male patient, and there is still a small chance that they may not split, even with the best technology we have today, especially like the ones that have very thin bone, that have compromised anatomy for the implant anchorage, then why would you order aligners if you don't know if they split? So
right.
you have to kind of use the logic.
Okay. Well, the reason I ask is because I've had a handful of patients who have got started Invisalign while they're doing the expansion part of their Marpie, and mm-hmm. they've had not good experiences. Like it's really painful, and some have actually had to drop out of their orthodontic treatment because of that. My Invisalign started after the expansion was done. And I was just wondering if there's a specific protocol or maybe negatives to using Invisalign while you're still expanding. It's caused like a couple of the patients I've worked with a lot of facial pain and a lot of symptoms where they couldn't tolerate both. And I was like, why do they do it at the same time? I wasn't sure why.
In our practice, we have a very busy practice. And I would say that my practice is based on very complicated cases. And I like the result that I deliver is more important than the appliance is the most important. And some cases, I think I can give a better result with braces than with aligners. The problem with aligners is that it's very difficult. If you need a lot of expansion, it's very difficult to upright the roots of those central incisors in diastema. You can totally use the expansion protocol that you almost don't open diastema anymore, like Dr. Casey Lee is doing with his procedure. So you don't have to open diastema. In other words, you won't have space as you're expanding very slowly. But mm-hmm. you take a CBCT and the crowns are tipped mesially and the roots are far apart. And because it takes such a long time, that new bone that fills that diastema space is very cortical. And it's mm-hmm. not going to be easy to bring those roots into the right position,
okay.
into the bone. So some patients may have the teeth that visually look more or less straight, but they have this black triangle near the base of the papilla that they mm-hmm. hate because mm-hmm. the teeth are not fully uprighted. So that is a disadvantage of aligners because you can't easily upright those teeth. In some patients, it's going to be more difficult than others, especially in patients that have very triangular teeth. Mm-hmm. That's susceptible to that black space between the gum okay. and the cortex of the teeth. But in general, I know that some of my colleagues are doing it at the same time. And I think it probably is not a bad idea for younger patients that when the bone is soft and they can tolerate a little bit of pressure better. But in adults that have very flat teeth, buccally, it may be too much pressure on the teeth as you are trying to expand. And especially if it is an airway patient where they may feel some constriction. So I can see that some people may have these symptoms. So that's why maybe it is better to finish your expansion and use the aligners, because today we can expand with a little bit slower protocol without opening diastema more than half a millimeter.
So
half a millimeter diastema, maybe a little bit of bonding will make some people that don't want a space between the teeth happy.
Okay.
But aligners during expansion are not for everyone, and even aligners after expansion should not be for everyone.
Yeah. And to be honest, I feel like mm-hmm. I don't sleep as well with the aligners because I feel like it takes up so much space. Even though it's such a thin amount of acrylic, it increases a vertical dimension and I feel my lower jaw goes back. Almost like a night guard or something where the lower jaw needs to be affixed to the upper jaw. And I really feel like I don't sleep as well. And I might wake up with like I was clenching, trying to hold my lower jaw forward. So I can see sometimes the aligners might not be the best option for patients.
It was more grinding of the teeth. And I think that the teeth are designed to function in proprioception, to utilize proprioception during function. So the teeth, when you touch tooth against the tooth, is not the same as you touch plastic against plastic.
Yeah.
If the patient doesn't have a long treatment plan, I think aligners are great. But if it is a case that needs 200 aligners, you have to think twice.
Yeah.
More than 200 aligners. I always like to get the teeth settled with rubber bands, with braces after expansion so I can get a solid bite. I mean, aligners are amazing. They work. But I don't think they should be for everyone. And you have to think twice when you want to use them on patients that need a lot of expansion.
And also patients who might be traveling to the orthodontist, it's better, right, if they get their pack of aligners versus driving to get braces adjusted, you know, who don't have the distance. last couple of things. How is your MARPI expansion going? And can you tell us a little bit about that and why you decided to do MARPI for yourself?
Expansion the goal of my expansion was to address my minimal maxillary deficiency that was compromising my bite, and I had a little bit of narrow smile issue, and also my nasal congestion. There was a time in my life before expansion, and there is now my life after expansion. So the life before expansion was that I had runny nose all the time. I could not travel or go anywhere without Kleenex in my bag because I had to blow my nose all the time. This was, mm-hmm. I don't know, I never was tested for allergies. This was me mm-hmm. from a young age. And after expansion, it all changed. I don't need to carry Kleenex on me anymore. So expansion helped my nasal breathing significantly. I was told before by ENT that I need septoplasty, turbinate reduction, And I was told by an orthodontist that I need a surgically assisted palatal expansion. So I'm glad I waited. My expansion journey started 3 years ago, right before COVID. I had two MSEs. They didn't work. With one MSE, I had like developed some pain and I didn't finish it completely. I maxed out the screw, so I took it out. I couldn't take it. And then the second MSE got me, in the end, 3 millimeters of expansion. So I was like 1 to 2 millimeters short of the goal that I wanted to achieve. I accepted it. But then I got busy after COVID, removed my expander, and I didn't put back the braces on the teeth. So anyway, I waited. And now I'm finishing my expansion journey with okay. the custom market.
Okay. So and who did
expansion in the fall. I'm very okay. happy, but I'm just doing a little bit more to fine-tune. I expanded. I split with my first expander on day 3.
Okay.
And with my third expander, I opened on day 1. As soon as okay. I started turning, I felt like, oh.
How many screws do you have? Do you have 6?
I have 4.
You have 4 tests. And who installed your MARPI?
My associate, Dr. Juliana Zoga.
Okay.
She installed my third one. One of my dear friends, Dr. Meryl Bauermash from New Jersey. She's practicing right outside of New York. So she installed my first one. My friend and colleague, Dr. George Bandalak, a periodontist that we work with, installed my second one. So I have people installing mine.
You're like, everybody, help me out here. Well, it's so great you got to experience, and that sounds amazing too, how you felt that change with the runny nose, and now your nose feels clear, and that's great.
Travel and sleep in the hotel without being severely congested. I think it's something I have probably allergy to dust.
Yeah. Yeah.
I
remember when my, before my suture even split, it felt like Afrin in the nose. Like I felt so clear. I'm like, that's weird. Am I making this up? Because it hadn't even split yet. But I felt that really way better nasal breathing. So I think we want to wrap up allowing you to talk about your course. But I know Renata also had a question. She was going to pop in. So whenever you're ready to come in to ask your question, there she is. Ta-da! Okay, so I wanted you, Dr. Evans, just to talk about your course. And could you also explain why it says 4D? What does the 4D stand for?
So the fourth dimension is the time. The fourth dimension is the age.
Okay.
The expansion that we are doing is a three-dimensional expansion because we are changing the jaw in 3 planes. We are helping the jaw grow horizontally, grow forward. And we are controlling the vertical dimension, so that 3 plane. And the fourth dimension is the age of the patient.
Okay.
Because at different age, you have to think differently.
Okay.
You can.
That's perfect. That's great. I was like, what is this fourth dimension? I don't know about. So do you want to just summarize, like talk about where your course is, the dates and everything again, what's covered?
Yes. Yeah, so this is the course that we will be, this is the first course because a lot of people contacted us, and I will do it again, and there's going to be an online version in a few months, but it's going to be in my office, so we can have a nice hands-on part on the appliances and make everyone comfortable going home and being able to use those appliances in their practices. So it's in my practice, right outside of Philadelphia in Glen Mills area. It's March, April 12th and 13th. And there will be more dates that I will be posting soon.
Okay, more. So this one will be in person. There'll also be a virtual, and then you'll have more course dates as well. Oh, great.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. Well, this sounds extremely important and amazing. And I hope you get a lot of people who register who are going to change the lives of children under the age of 6, because that is the most important age group to get these issues treated and get them on a correct growth path. So I thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. I know you're so busy.
Thank you for listening to our radio style broadcast. where we bring different perspectives to the airway world in an easily digestible format. Different hosts, different views, same airway talk. Don't forget to leave us a review. Bye-bye.